welcome to Mrs. Techie's Technology Classroom for another week. This week we're going to be talking about some amazing stories coming out of Australia with kids who are creating tech for their own personal purposes and achieving great success while they're doing so. So this week in my technology classroom, I talked to my senior classes about a certain young lady from Britain who is making quite a lot of money naming Chinese babies. You might have heard of her. She's been featured in the news pretty prominently over the last week or two. Her name's Bo Jessop. And when she was 16, her dad went on a business trip to China and she went along with him. While she was there, she met one of her dad's business colleagues who had a three-year-old daughter who had a beautiful Chinese name. But the businessman was very interested in giving her the perfect English name because with China becoming a more global economy, lots of Chinese families are giving their children an English name so that when they travel for study or later for business, that they've got a name that helps them to sort of fit in with their peers wherever they may be. So Bo herself had grown up in London and had known a number of Chinese students who had had names that were perhaps not quite so culturally appropriate. There were names like William and things like that, which are lovely. But some Chinese families hadn't understood that a name like Popcorn might be subject to ridicule. And that's one of the examples she gave. Another one that she gave was she'd met a Chinese student called Gandalf. And while the Chinese parents had thought that this was a name that would command a lot of respect, and it was a name for someone who was very wise, that obviously in Western culture, that's not really the case. So she acknowledged that she needed to sort of cross that cultural divide and choose a name that really suited the qualities that the parents wanted to bestow upon the child with a name. And so she came up eventually after a few days of thinking with the name Eliza from Eliza Doolittle and told the parents about all the positive connotations that were there for a name like that in Western culture. When she got home, she decided that maybe she might like to start her own business, offering this service to other people. So she borrowed around 3,000 Australian from her dad and set up a website and created some programming to help her do just that. And we'll go into that a little bit more in a moment. I think the really interesting thing here and that we talked about in our classes is that the remainder of the money she actually spent on advertising. I'm not sure what the balance was there, but my understanding is there was a little bit of money spent on advertising and that she chose one of China's biggest communication platforms, which is called WeChat. They don't have Facebook Messenger and things over there, but they do have WeChat. And so in China, this was a really great way to get some advertising out to Chinese families. Now she set up the website, she put some programming in, and she went through a baby name book in the following holidays. She actually spent some time researching and found about 4,000 names that would have those qualities that Chinese families would see as really important. Some were girls, some were boys, and for each of those names she sort of attached five really strong characteristics to the name. So those 4,000 names each had five characteristics that Chinese families might be looking for. Then she set up the website so that families dropping in would choose whether they were looking for a girl name or a boy name, and they would select up to five qualities or characteristics they wanted their child to have and that the name would sort of imbue. And then a program would run, and within 5 minutes the Chinese family would be emailed 3 to 5 English names that might be suitable for their purposes. So you'd think, wow, well, I wonder what she charged for this sort of service. And it's interesting to note that she actually charged 60 pence. So that's about $1 Australian. It doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. I'm not sure how the economy in China works, whether that is a lot of money for them or not. I think it's probably more than it is for us. But it's still a very affordable service. And I guess that once she set up the program, she may have been looking for quantity over anything else, that she'd won a lot of customers to this site. And so she actually gave away a few hundred names for free just to get the service running. And now she's at the point where she names around 800 babies every single day. When we talked to the kids about that, and they said, oh, how does she have time to do that? And we talked about the programming that was required. And some kids actually spent a bit of time talking with one another about, how would you do that? How would you, select the right name, what would the program look like. Other kids were just fascinated with the money. So she doesn't really have to do much at all except for some maintenance on her website and maybe some advertising. And with the kids, we brainstormed the sorts of things she might need to do to keep her business running. Now, one of the big things that she has said in many interviews and articles is that she does spend a bit of time on her website, and she's constantly developing improvements to that website to make the experience more pleasant for her customers and to make it easier and quicker for them to get what they need. So, you know, she's not just sit back and take the money. She's really working on that personalized service, that idea that she's selling a service to somebody. Meanwhile, she's when asked what she'd do with the money, because the figures are that in the first 6 months, and she's been running 3 years, so in the first 6 months she earned about 84,000 Australian, which is quite good for a 16-year-old girl, I have to say. No, I wouldn't mind that. You know, that's a pretty big return for any age, let alone 16-year-old. So she talked about what she's going to do with her money, and she said, well, at the moment she's just started at university. She's studying social anthropology. She has a real heart for people and for service. So at the moment it's going towards her university education. She's thinking about possibly investing in some property for herself, because that's a sensible idea that everyone is pushing her to do. But actually, in the long shot, she's not sure. She wants to continue working to help people with the business that she runs, and so she'll work out what to do with it from there. So I think, you know, that's a really positive story for kids to hear, and it's a really interesting one. It actually sort of, my hubby and I, he works in IT. He's been part of lots of projects where people have sort of started out saying, well, how can we make a lot of money? How will we actually design a product or a service that's going to bring us in some money? And he's sat beside and helped people with those projects. And we often notice that those are the projects that, you know, often are reasonably successful, but they never really take off. The projects that we've seen that have been wildly successful and we've seen them take off, the ones we've watched from the sidelines, have always been people trying to help other people. They're not in it for the money, they're in it to provide a really quality service. And then the bonus has just been that it actually has been a very profitable experience for those initial innovators. You know, that it's not all about the money. People who've made the big dollars are often the ones who are just really passionate about their product or passionate about their service, and that is a really great way to live, even if it doesn't make you much money at all. And I think that's something that's worth talking about with our students. Okay, so for our second, well, let's call them kidpreneurs. You know, they're kids who are entrepreneurs, kids who are out there being innovative and working towards making the world a better place. So the second one I want to talk to you about is actually more local to us. She's an Australian schoolgirl at 14 years old. She was growing up in St Kilda and decided that she wanted to design a product that would be really safe for all skin types, and she wanted to design an organic and all-natural cosmetic. So her name's Isabella Dymilovsky. My apologies if I've said that wrong. I've tried really hard. And she was actually labelled in Fortune's 18 Under 18 in 2016 for her really the amazing way that she put together her product and the way that she marketed it. So she's still, you know, really quite young, but she's actually got her product being sold in 370 Priceline stores across Australia. I couldn't find a whole lot of information about this particular girl, but I can imagine the sorts of hoops that you have to jump through to get a cosmetic product to produced and sold in Australia. You know, there's a whole lot of health and safety regulations and all those sorts of things. And so for a young person, I'm sure she's had help from other people, but for her to actually develop and produce such a product is nothing short of remarkable. The next one I want to talk to you about is Bella Tipping. So Bella Tipping, I find her story is pretty amazing, and kids do too. So when she was 12 years old, she went on holidays with her family, and she didn't have the best time. Instead of coming back and just whinging to a teacher and writing in a journal about it, she thought, well, what could I do to improve the situation? How could I make sure that next time mum and dad take me away somewhere that we have a better time, and that the holiday is better suited to the ages of the people in our family, i.e. kids? So she's just an Aussie kid from Dubbo, so she's regional. And she decided, no more chicken nuggets. I want to know that I'm going somewhere that suits my needs. I'm going to come up with a website called Kidcations, and I'm going to let other kids review things like hotels and restaurants and services while they're on holiday, so that I've got somewhere good to go and get some reviews from and choose where I want to go next. Now, this wasn't a new idea. There have been places like TripAdvisor and WhatIf, and Expedia has their own review service. They've been going for years, but there's nothing really that asks the kids to comment. It's always adults commenting on those sites. You know, you can comment as a single, a couple, a group, or a family, but there's nothing that says, what about 14-year-old kids or 8-year-old kids and those sorts of things. You can trawl through a whole lot of reviews, but there's nothing that pops up as being kid-friendly from the outset. So she made a website. She set up with her own personal blog and put her own stories on, invited others to submit there too. And then she linked it to Expedia so that once people had found the place that they were interested in, they could actually click through and see how much it costs and book it straight up. So it's a really full service type website. Even though she's not providing all of the services, she certainly has the links through to make sure that she can fulfill her end of the bargain and get people to places that are going to suit them well. She was featured on Fortune's 18 under 18 list in 2016 as well. And again, you know, she has had some big success there. They're really good. And she's not content to sit on her laurels now and just, you know, see where it goes. She's actually working to further improve that model, and she's also looking at an offshoot of her initial business there. After travelling and seeing people struggling with wheelchairs at the airport, she's really wants to be an advocate for travellers with disabilities. She wants to make sure that wheelchairs are better treated while travelling. I'm not sure if you've ever travelled with someone with a wheelchair, but often what happens is that their wheelchair that they're comfortable with gets wrapped in plastic, popped in the luggage, and you know, these wheelchairs are basically, you know, part of that person that they see that as an offshoot of themselves. So they get wrapped in plastic, chucked on a conveyor belt, you've got to hope and pray it finds you at the other end, and then you're given a pretty shoddy airport wheelchair to get to the gate in, and then you sort of shuffled from one wheelchair to a seat and back again, and it's quite a complicated process, and there's always that stress of what if my wheelchair isn't waiting for me at the other end. And so she saw that at the airport and thought to herself, there's just got to be a better way. So that's what she's focusing on at the moment, is lobbying airlines to, you know, work with people with those sorts of challenges. But also she would like to have a website. She's in development so that people with wheelchairs can get a tailored experience and tailored reviews for different places that they might like to visit. So again, she's really focusing on her customers, on serving them. I couldn't actually find the net worth or the income that those two teenagers from Australia are making, and I'm sure there's some really good reasons for that. If I was their parent, I wouldn't want that listed either. And so it was a bit tricky to find information on them in the Australian media. However, they were acknowledged in the US media, so I think they're doing okay, those two girls, and good for them. More power to them. Couple other kid investors. So actually in 2018, the highest paid YouTube star was actually a 7-year-old. His name's Ryan, and he had Ryan Toy Reviews with 17.4 million subscribers. Now, he's a United States citizen. He's just a little boy who set up his own YouTube channel with the help of his parents, obviously. A little bit of a character, and people really love watching him play with and review toys to the tune of $30 million. You know, so this is just a kid who's doing what he loves, playing with toys, recording it, watching himself back. Who doesn't know a kid like that? If you have anything to do with small children, they're often saying, Mum, record this, put it on Facebook. You know, these little people are growing up knowing that the audience is bigger than one. It's bigger than their mum, that whatever they do, given the right technology, could be shared far and wide. Not all kids are like that, but there's certainly, you know, I'm pretty sure most of you who are around kids would know at least one of those in your life. And why squash that creativity? We need to teach them how to do that safely, obviously. But, you know, if that's something that they're looking forward to. We do need those sorts of people in our communities who are going to be prepared to be an on-screen presence or an in-real-life presence, who can talk and communicate in effective ways and who know what sort of things are worth sharing. So, you know, that one's pretty cool. I wish I had a seven-year-old who could earn me $30 million. I think there's probably a lot of issues you could talk to with kids about that, about really just ensuring their safety and perhaps using names that aren't too revealing of as to who you are and where you are, and also things like making sure that you don't give away your location, for example, or your school, not wearing your uniform and things in those videos that might be shared far and wide. So, pretty cool. Back to Australia, some app developers now. So, there are two. The first one is Anvitha Vijay, and she actually has been sent to Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, despite the fact that at the time she was only 9 years old. So at 7 years old, she knew her little sister, who was under five at the time, was having trouble identifying animals. And she thought, okay, I could make an app to help with that. Don't you love that? A seven-year-old goes, we'll just make an app. For us, apps are so new. But for these kids, it's what they've grown up knowing. They've been around them since they were infants. So she was seven at the time, and she designed this little app. It took her about 2 years to get it to a point where she was really happy with it. And then when she was nine, she just popped it into the app store, and it was called Smart Kids Animals, and it was for kids age five and under. If you've ever been a parent of a small person, or you've looked after a small person, and sometimes you do want to give them a device and give them something to play with, you may have fallen into the pitfall of knowing that, you know, YouTube isn't the best babysitter. There are a lot of scary things out there. And we know with the whole Momo craze that we've just been through, shudder just thinking about the conversations we've had to have with kids and teenagers over that one, that there are lots of scary things out there. So, you know, when my kids were little, there were a couple of different design companies that were my go-to. You know, nice hairdressing game or nice feeding a rabbit game or whatever it is. And you know that that particular developer makes apps just for children. So popping it in the five and under category, you know that Apple has vetted it to make sure that that is okay. And I think it's a really wonderful thing for a kid to think about. Obviously, she's probably had some parental support there. That, you know, this app is just for little children, and that's where the market is. And so, yeah, she was actually given one of 350 Apple scholarships because her idea was so well thought out and done. And she's continuing to work on apps even now. So, you know, at 9 years old, you've got this whole lot of skill behind you. She learnt the coding on her own. She just kept playing with it, educated guess and check. Until she knew what she was doing. And this is just someone in her bedroom on a computer that's made something by 9 years old. I just think that's, you know, when we look at kids and we say, oh, they're not old enough, they need more time. No, just let them go. It's amazing what resourcefulness can come out of kids. As I say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And for kids, these apps and things are a real necessity. They're not just an add-on. They're actually part of their worldview, part of their life, part of who they are. So they want it to work. That is highly motivating, and they'll find a way. So the last one that I'll talk about today is called Yuma Sorianto. And again, my apologies for poor pronunciation. I'm trying my best here. So for 2 years in a row, he's been to Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. So Anvitha, she's a girl, I think she's from Victoria. She's Australian for sure. She's not the only child at this web developer conference. And I find that super interesting, but not surprising that Apple are really investing in children. Children are so much more creative than adults. They don't see the limitations around them. They're willing to give things a shot. And now if they fail, well, it's not their whole future riding on it. It's just something that they're doing for fun. So I think Apple's probably onto a good wicket there, really looking at the creativity of kids. And kids see problems where we that could be solved, where we just see problems. So anyway, Yuma has also been going to Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. He's been 2 years in a row, and he started building websites at 6 years old. He decided he would like to improve his websites and asked for help, and quickly realised around him that there was no one who could help him, because his level of expertise surpass the adults in his life. So he thought, how can I improve? And remember, this is a six-year-old. So he went to iTunes U and looked for a coding course and found a Swift coding course from Stanford University. I've talked previously in Opportunities for Teachers. There are amazing free courses from amazing universities and colleges around the world. Stanford's one that has quite a lot of online courses that you can access for free. As I've said in the previous episode, you access them for free. If you want the accreditation, like you want a certificate at the end of it, you pay a fee. Usually it's about $60, $70. Sometimes it's a bit more expensive. But you pay a fee and they'll send you the certificate. Otherwise, just learn what you need to learn and move on. And kids are really great at this. Kids will often say, oh, I learned this from YouTube, or I Googled it and followed some directions I found on, there's so many amazing websites out there that will teach you how to do things. But yes, these courses, I find they're amazing. As I said, my teenage son has had a look at Stanford's songwriting course, which, you know, he could just do that in his own bedroom with his very bad electric guitar playing, and that's an easy fix for lots and lots of kids and teenagers out there wanting to learn something. You know, back in our day we went to the library and hoped there was a book, but the library has become so much bigger and global. Anyway, so he learnt how to make apps from this course from Stanford, and very quickly he made 5 apps. Now, when you hear about what the apps are that have made him, you know, quite rich and noticed in the community, you'll go, well, are they even apps? What? They're very, very simple ideas, but that's what apps are. They're often very one-dimensional, very simple. Oh, I've got an app for that. I'll go and do that thing there. Probably lots of you out there to do a job, like to edit a photo well for Instagram, you'll know that you're going to Instagram. Then you'll head out to layout to set the photos out. Then you might send it across to another app to add, you know, special sparkles or filters or whatever, and then bring it back into Instagram to post. So apps can be very, very simple and very one-dimensional. And in fact, those are the ones that seem to work the best, because there's no limit to the amount of apps that you can have. And you can find the one that specifically meets your purpose. So the sorts of apps that he made were a Pokemon encyclopedia. Again, what would I want? What would my friends want? What do we need? Let's make a Pokemon encyclopedia so that people can find out all the information they need to know about their Pokemons. Now, this was obviously an opportune time where Pokemon Go was a big craze, and, you know, so timing is everything, and getting things done quickly is everything in the tech world, because we all know if you don't jump on an idea and see it to fruition quickly, someone else will, or before you know it, that problem won't be an issue anymore. The world changes so fast. Another one was like a fun calculator. It just looked fun, better than a normal one. And there was another one, which I thought was quite cute, called What Should I Wear? And it was an app featuring a little duck, and it tells you the temperature outside and whether it's going to rain or not, and says, you know, I think you should wear a jumper today, or I think you should wear a raincoat and take an umbrella, or, you know, wear your sandals today, it's going to be warm, wear socks. So I think that's, those things are quite simple but quite amazing. And to think that a young child he's now 10 has been able to do those things, and the article I read about him was from last year, so who knows what he's done in the last 12 months, except that he was talking last year about continuing into augmented reality, and so looking into making some virtual reality type apps. This is something that has been really a talking point across my classroom this week as well. We watch a little bit of BTN in my general year 5-6 class, which I have 4 mornings a week. I do project-based learning there with HASS. So this term has been geography, HASS, science and English. Those are the 3 areas that I teach, as well as technology. And we try and do it in a project-based learning where appropriate. Sometimes I'm just teaching skills, but often it's sending kids off to do a project. And so as part of our BTN viewing, there's usually a little technology segment, and the kids were really interested in the virtual reality farming that has come up in Australia. So we talked about why a farmer might choose to go away from his farm, get a bus, kit it out with virtual reality headsets and then take it to schools and let kids have a farm excursion inside this bus. He's got a whole lot of technology where he records using drones, video cameras, to provide that sort of first person experience of being on a farm, patting a pig, looking at cows, flying over in a helicopter and those sorts of things. And the kids were really very intuitive about it. I said, well, why might someone move away from their farm for a time to go and offer this service? They said, well, to get people excited about farming, maybe he needs to supplement his first business, which is farming, with some extra income. Perhaps he wants to have a break from farming, doesn't want to be outside anymore. You know, these kids could see what problems might push someone into diversifying their business in this way. So these kids are ready for those conversations. And they were really interested in this virtual reality. A few of them have tried it. One of my goals is next term to get a bit of virtual reality into my program. We have the equipment at home, just using old phones and some of those goggles where you place the phone in. It's not perfect. It's not super advanced technology, but it is getting kids access to that technology. And we were talking about how they might incorporate virtual reality technology into their lives. We talked about that in our family. A couple of people in our family like to take those 360 photographs when we're somewhere special on holiday, so that when we get home we can put on the goggles and actually be back in that place. And we have a bit of fun posing in those photos sometimes, although often whoever's taking the photo loves to do things like give me two heads or no legs. So, you know, there are ways to do that for a bit of fun. But also, you know, how nice for the kids later in their life to be able to step back into some of our family holidays and see mum and dad and brother or sister, brothers, whatever, enjoying themselves in that moment, and to be able to revisit that moment in a real way and point out the details when they're retelling that story later on. Or maybe you think that's gross. Maybe you think it's better to rely on your memory. But, you know, it's an interesting sort of concept and something that we've been experimenting with as a family. And I'd like to experiment with my classes and for kids to think about how that technology could improve their lives or what they could do with it to help improve the lives of others. So, technology and kids and success and getting kids out there and using their technology for good. I think it's really important that we say to kids, the technology that we're teaching them in the classroom, yes, it may be useful later on in their lives as adults, but they don't have to wait. You know, kids can do amazing things. And if you've got a good idea and you've got the equipment and resources and perhaps you've got an adult that can help you, why wait till you're an adult? Why not give it a go now? All that experimenting that you might do now might lead you to a career pathway. It might lead you to an adult hobby. It might just make you feel good on the inside, and it might just change the world. Kids have to believe that they have agency in the world. You know, we're looking at a generation that they're predicting are going to grow up with all these depression and anxiety issues. And I think that empowering kids now, making them believe that they can do things in the world, letting them try things and fail and then pick themselves back up and move on, I think that all starts now. We can't wait till they're 18, 19 years old. Let them have a go. Let them see what happens while the stakes are quite low. And encourage them. You know, for every one of these success stories here that I've talked about today, so Yuma and Vitha and Ryan and Bella and Isabella and Bo, you know, for every one of those, there might be 200 kids who've tried something and failed. In my own household here, I've got kids experimenting with technology and trying things, and it's not always going well, and that's okay. They know that, oh, well, tomorrow's another day and let's move on and do something. You know, as I said, I have got three children who are quite keen on having some sort of digital presence for their career. And looking, the reality of it is that, you know, they're predicting 70% of kids are going to have some sort of digital skill to be able to do their jobs as they grow older. And or more, I think it's probably 100%. But anyway, so we really need to make sure that the kids have got the confidence to tackle these things. And if we want the world to change in good ways, then we need to let them start thinking about those experiments now. And you'd be surprised about how excited they get when they think about the ways that they could be part of that change they could be part of that growth. They could be part of solving those problems that adults have been whinging and talking about forever. So thank you for listening this week. Just a little bit of positive talk about our kids, you know. Let's see what we can inspire them to do. If you have a wonderful success story from one of your students using technology to better themselves, their community, or society at large, please feel free to share it. Take some of these stories back to your kids, look them up, and let them get excited. The world is an exciting place. It can be scary, but it also is such a beautiful place, and it has so much possibility for the kids in front of us. Check us out on Mrs. Techie's Technology Classroom and have a great week. Next week, I have a special guest with me, and then we'll have 2 weeks off for school holidays. But next week, I'm getting some students in to talk with me on the show and talk about some of the ethical dilemmas they can see happening with new technology. So look forward to talking with them then. Have a wonderful week. Thank you.